Hey everybody, what's up? Sarah's back, and today I have Daniel Jones of the Aspie World. Woohoo!
Hey everyone, this is Sarah, and welcome to my show. Woohoo!
Hey, what's up? Hey. Hey, what's up, Dan? So originally I found Dan when I was looking for information on YouTube. So Dan has a fabulous YouTube channel called The Aspie World, and it's all about, well, Dan, I'll let you explain it.
Thank you. Thanks. So the channel is basically about educating people on autism and ADHD and a bit of dyslexia and OCD, but mainly autism and other mental health kind of conditions through the experiences that I have in my life. And what I try to do is I try to make like hacks and tips and tricks so that parents and caregivers and people on the spectrum can kind of learn and grow with me. It's kind of like a follow along and see how we get on.
Right. And so, Dan, I know you used this introduction in your YouTube channel, but you are on the spectrum, right? And then what else?
So I have a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. I also have a diagnosis of ADHD, OCD, dyslexia. I have sensory processing disorder, and I do suffer from anxiety, depression, and some seasonal affective disorders as well.
Right. So what I find to be remarkable is that Dan is able to educate about these disorders in a way that I feel, and this is how it's, I feel really different from what I see on a lot of other YouTube channels and podcasts, is that he's not as clinical about it. You know, it's not like he's going to talk about research and take it like a PhD would talk about it, right? But he makes it human and relatable, and he uses real analogies and, you know, makes things understandable on a human level to people who maybe don't have these conditions. So that's what I really love about the channel. And the other thing is Dan's been really successful at this. I mean, how big is your YouTube channel now?
Yeah, I mean, we've been going, I mean, I started the channel in 2013, but I didn't actually really do anything until late 2015. So 2016 and 17 was really like gung-ho for me. And so this month we hit 119,000 subscribers on the channel.
Oh my goodness.
Which is pretty, this is what this plaque here is, that they gave me 100,000 subscriber
right
plaque. But we also, like, you know, we're on every platform going. We're actually on Instagram as well. We got like over 16,000 on Instagram. Sorry, my dog is wanting my attention. Randy, please. So in terms of, but we're growing. I mean, we've got over like 80,000 listeners on the podcast. The website
gets,
I don't know, like,
unbelievable.
6,000 views a day, something ridiculous like that. On Pinterest, we get in excess, when we have a good week on Pinterest, we get in excess of 750,000 unique visitors in a month. So it's not too bad at all. So we're me and my small team of people are trying to really bridge that gap. It's like you said, between like contextual information that people can digest in a way that is very human and
very
and
very relatable. Contextual. Yes. Yep.
Because the problem I've seen, though, is that people on the spectrum were putting content out, and there was two things. One, it was not entertaining. It was very boring.
Right.
And the second, it was either too personal and dark, or it was very academic. So I was like, shoot, I wanted to make a show, a series, like a YouTube show where I can have fun talking about stuff like that, you know, that is really serious. You know, you can still talk about something quite serious and still have a bit of fun with it. And so that's what I do. So I kind of like make fun of like some of my traits, my issues that I have, because if I don't laugh, I'll cry. So it's good. But
it's like you make me laugh about it too. You know what I'm saying? Because my son, all of you listening, you know that I have a son with some of these, you know, traits and conditions, no official diagnosis, but you know, there are some special needs conditions here. And it's like it was totally relatable, you know, and I think all you just have to watch his channel to know what he means. But and yeah, and it really puts it in a positive light. And it for me, it's made me just really, I mean, I have always appreciated my son's neuroatypicality, but it's made me just view it as a blessing and a gift and a strength. And Dan, this is what you've done, is that you've, I mean, y'all understand, like, he's created a business. Like, this is someone. You heard him, like ADHD, autism, all these things, and he's overcome. And he's a successful business owner. Awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, so I also have, so the channel has won two awards, one YouTube Next Up Award. We won a WeGo Health Award for an American healthcare company. I won Best Show on YouTube last year, the end of last year. Also, we got the 100,000 subscribers. And then on Thursday, I'm actually in Birmingham with the National Autistic Society because I've been nominated. I'm obviously shortlist nomination for an Autism Professionals Award. I also have a book out, a best-selling book in the United States and the United Kingdom, and it's also out in three languages. You get it in Italian and Hungarian as well. So there's a bunch of stuff that I've done. And you know, but whilst doing all of this, I also did a BSc in chemistry. So I have a degree in chemistry, a bachelor's degree in chemistry as well. So I like to do a lot of things all at once, because if I don't, then like I start to kind of decline. My motivation isn't there. I need to be excessively busy all the time.
Right, right. And so, as you know, all of you, that this show is about how financial advisors can better serve their clients. And so one of the things that I want to talk about is, with autism increasingly being diagnosed in the population, it's the trend here in the U.S., and I think it's great because there's more treatment available now. When, you know, you get diagnosed, you can get the person help, and that's really important. There's been a lot of modification of social environments and a lot of sensitivity. For example, we have special shopping hours in stores. Stores will do things like dim the lights and, you know, create a more accepting environment for autistic people, that it's easier for them to tolerate. And by the way, what happens in a lot of those stores is that once the stores create this autism, what do they call it? Like, what are
autism
the autism hour, right? What happens is a lot of people who are not autistic end up going. And like, I've heard so many stories of stores that are like, we have to extend the hours. And like, we're considering just creating this environment for a normal going concern because it has been that popular with people. But so the first myth I just want to dispel here, and you see that Dan is an example, is that autistic people can be successful. Like, it is a spectrum. There are some autistic people that do not function on a high level. They cannot speak. They cannot execute daily activities. But then there are others. You see Dan here has a business, has a child, all of these things, right? So that's the first thing I just want to say outright is, you may not even know that some of your clients are autistic. Because,
yeah.
Right, it's the symptoms or the signs are so different from one person to another. So I just want to increase that awareness. The second thing is that autistic people absolutely can be successful, and it's not out of the question. However, a lot of times they do need additional resources in order to be able to do that. So Dan, what can you tell us about if you were to hire a financial advisor, and I know that your girl takes care of this for you, but if you were to hire somebody from the outside to help you with your money and your finances, what were some of the things that you would need this person to understand about you?
I think if you look at it like this, the people on the spectrum, regardless of their ability or their support needs, because like you said, you know, there is a spectrum and you have like low support needs, high support needs, whatever. If I was to have somebody come into my life and help me financially for financial advice, it would be, how do I store receipts? Like, how do I store all of the receipts that my expenditures? How do I tally up all the money that I've spent? How do I organize the flow of money coming in and the flow of money going out, right? Because those, especially when you're running a business, right? For me specifically, I've got so much, like, you know, different types of revenue sources coming in, and then I have so much going out. And then that all has to be like put into an organized manner, because my accountant, I'm like, how on earth do I do that? I have a bad time trying to figure out how to organize my money to go to the store to buy groceries. You know, that trying to figure out, oh, I need X amount for this amount of stuff is quite confusing. It's quite overwhelming, because you have to think in terms of like, it's hard to explain, but it's how much comes in and how much goes out. That whole tallying, because it's got to be done almost instantly, right? When you're in the store, you know how much you're going to pay, and you know how much you're going to get back. People can kind of like do it as and when they do it, but the whole process of it is quite difficult. So in terms of financial advice, it's it's paramount that someone on the spectrum understands the organization of how the value of something, and then what actually happens. Because what I fall foul of a lot of the time is that if I was obsessed with solar panels, right, photovoltaic cells, and I loved them, and I wanted to build some, and then so I decided that I was going to buy these photovoltaic cells.
So one thing about autism and ADHD, I think they share the characteristic that hyperfocus is often a characteristic of this.
Right. Yeah. Well, you have like an obsessive interest in something, and then you like really focus in, and that becomes the thing that you like attach to. So what I did is I got really into this. Like, I wanted to build this photovoltaic cell circle, and this circuit in my house. So I just bought all the stuff, and my girlfriend was like, "You do realize that now you just spent all your money?" And I was like, "I don't know what you mean." Like, she said, "Well, you had a certain amount of capital in this account, and then you just spent it all on this like solar panel and this setup." And I was like, "Okay, so what's wrong with that?" And she said, "Well, she said, so what are you gonna, how are you gonna buy your groceries for the next kind of couple of weeks?" And I thought, oh yeah, so it's kind of like it's planning ahead of all the things that you need to prepare for financially, and knowing the value of what you have versus what you want to get, and knowing that, you know, some things are higher value than maybe what you do have, mm-hmm. you know, monetary wise. So that's super confusing. So I think that's how I think literal like organizing and financial advice of, hey, you have this much, you can only spend this much within this many days. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay. But what about when financial advisors help people with retirement planning, like looking 30, 40 years into the future? What would you tell a financial advisor that's helping someone with something like that?
Try and secure the best pension scheme you can. Because at the end of the day, I don't know if you guys have pension schemes like we do here in the UK, but like, you know, you have to pay into, you know, you say basically saving for the future. And we literally, it's funny, we were just doing that this month, because in the UK, if you pay in a certain amount, okay, I'm really terrible, but if you pay in a certain amount and the government pays some towards it as well, so that you have like a nice retirement fund that you can then live off when you finally retire. And one of the things that I've found foul of is it never even registered in my brain that this is a thing. And never, because I'm thinking, it's hard to think of stuff that hasn't happened yet for anyone mm-hmm. on the spectrum. So if you said to me, "Dan, tomorrow we need to go and do this thing," I'd be like, "Okay, cool." And it would never happen. Like, I'd just completely forget. So by saying, "Dan, you need to save for your, you know, retirement," I mean, goodness me, I can't be in charge of that because there's no way it would ever be done. So you'd have to have, you know, a financial advisor would have to kind of secure those pipelines and say, "Okay, we need a schedule plan of how you're going to do it." And they'd have to manage how that would actually, you know, how that flow would work, and to make sure that the person on the spectrum was actually, you know, doing that saving and preparing for the future, because it would never come into their mind. They probably would never even think about it. I didn't think about it. Literally this week, I'm 33 years old, and I just talk about it now, like this week.
Right. Okay. So now what about the tendency that many people on the spectrum have to get overwhelmed by sensory inputs? What would you tell financial advisors that are working with clients
on the spectrum? So it's a really interesting one, because people on the spectrum, everybody on the spectrum, I don't think it really skips anybody. They all have sensory processing issues. And this could be like noise, lights, smell, even standing in a certain part of a room, which may be uncomfortable and overloading, even words. Like, so if I hear certain words, those words can make me quite triggered. So I can't actually, I have to kind of take certain words out of my friend's vocabulary, and that sounds bizarre. So for a financial advisor, what you should
do, like temperature also, right?
Temperature is a huge one. I literally just came into the office and I turned the radio straight off because
My son, every single day he comes home from school and he takes his shirt off and his socks off and right when he walks in the door.
Yeah. I'm like hot all the time. And
he's hot all the time.
That can get kind of confusing, because when I start getting quite agitated, I get excessively hot and I have to start taking my clothes off. It's okay when I'm in the house and I'm in my underpants, it's okay. But if we're outside and we're in a mall, like, it's not a good thing. I start no. freaking out. I'm like, I have to take my shoes off, and it's just ridiculous. So right. a financial advisor would, if I was a financial advisor, would have to meet with the client and ask what the client's specific kind of environmental needs are. So that would be like, mm-hmm. okay, so if you're going to you have to go to their office, or they're going to come to your home. Like a home visit is way easier because it's way more comfortable, right? If you're going to a financial advisor's office, you'd have to say to them, hey, look, I'm susceptible to heat. I can't be around the smell of coffee. I can't be around too many people. Can we have it like in a quiet space? There can't be any bright lights. Like I can't be under like those fluorescent lights because they like flicker quite a bit. And so I really like, I can't concentrate. So in terms of, I always think about environment and I got to think about it like this. Like if you want a successful meeting with a client, think about it like this. If you wanted to ride a bike, you wouldn't take the bike and put it on the sand in the beach, right? Because that environment is not good for that bike. But if you put it on a park lane, you could ride it really well. So you and your client need to have the right environment to gain success for the objective of that entire meeting. So that's how I always think about it. That's how I would envision it. I always think environment. So how do you fix the environment? Well, the only way to find out is to ask the client, hey, what are your specific needs environmentally? You know what I mean? And I mean, not like global climate. I mean, just, local environment.
Right. Okay. And so what about maybe when you're communicating with the client who might be on the spectrum, what might financial advisors need to know about just communications, like over the phone or over email?
So email is always best. I would always prefer that anybody email me, right? Because when you email something, I can have my computer dictate it to me at a speed where I can digest it. If I'm having a conversation with somebody, because of the intense nature of having a conversation with somebody on the telephone, it becomes overwhelming, and then you don't take the person on the spectrum probably wouldn't register that information. But if you have an email, you can go through it in your leisure. Go through the email again and again and again and again and again, and then you can digest that information or pass it to somebody and say, hey, could you read this to me and then explain that detail to me. The other thing I would say about communication is if you're meeting face to face with a client, try your best to draw out the scenario with small symbols. I know it sounds stupid, right? But it's highly effective.
No, I was talking with someone. I was talking to someone with dyslexia, and they actually said the same thing.
Yeah. So,
tell me about that.
So people on the spectrum are visual thinkers. So my girlfriend is forever telling me things like, hey, I went to this store and I did this and I turned that way and I went down there and then I went over that. And you know what? I'm just like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Let's just forget it. Just draw me a picture. So literally now she'll come in and she'll be like, right, okay. She'll get a pen out. She'll be like drawing down this, like, how the store looks and then the layout. And I'm like, oh, I see it. Or better still, she gets her phone, her iPhone. She takes pictures of the stuff and it shows me the pictures and it draws on the picture on like WhatsApp and sends me that, because there's no way on earth I'm ever going to imagine. I can never imagine something that she'll tell me. If she says to me, oh, imagine, the car looks like this with this type of interior. I mean, just forget it. You've already lost me at the word imagine this, because it would never happen. So whenever I meet with anybody, we get a whiteboard out and we're like, we have to draw out everything that we're doing. So we draw like little symbols. A good one is emojis. So the more emojis someone uses in an email to me, the better, because I can understand the tone of the email. Because if you have an email that's just complete blank text, I don't know if the person's happy, angry, or sad. I can barely know if someone's happy, angry, or sad if I'm talking to them in real life. But if they had emojis, if they show me like a smiley face or a sad face, then I'm going, oh yeah, I get it. There's an angry emoji, it means they're angry. So that's super important, actually.
Okay, wait, hold on. You said something really important there that I think financial advisors need to understand. So you said it's hard for you to understand people's facial expressions in real life. Okay, tell me about that.
So I don't always look, it's difficult to look people in the eye, right? And so when you're looking somebody in the eye, typically you're seeing this much of their face. So you're seeing like this, which means that you can see the expressions of their eyebrows and their mouths and their eyes. And those are how you dictate to someone that you or you picture someone that your expression of your feeling. Now, my facial expressions don't match my feelings, which is quite interesting. But also, I don't really if I'm looking at someone, I find it very hard to find out, is that person angry? Because everybody looks quite angry to me. I always think, everyone, like, by default, everyone looks really angry. That's what my default is. But then, like, and it gets in trouble because I go to someone, like, this guy is being a jerk. You know, my girlfriend's like, no, he's absolutely fine. What are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, I have no idea. So it becomes quite frustrating. Because, and so, again, you got to think that the majority of autistic people don't look people in the eyes, so they're not looking at the facial expressions anyway. But if you are looking at, you know, if you are an autistic person who can look people in the eyes, you've got a disadvantage of understanding what the facial expressions mean, because registering those kind of non-verbal communicative patterns, which is like 70% of like hand gestures and like, you know, facial expressions, the way how you move and all this kind of unwritten social rubbish, someone on the spectrum doesn't really pick up on that because that's not the focus of the conversation. Let me put it this way. If I meet you and I say, hey, we're going to talk about financial advising for my sandwich business, right? Or we're going to talk about financial advising for your savings. We go, okay. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, we're talking about financial advising for savings. And that's what I'm thinking about. But what you didn't do is say, hey, we're going to talk about financial advising for savings, but you're going to have to look at my face to see if I'm going to be happy, sad, or angry. So then you'd be like, okay, well, I'll have to look at both of those things. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like you're there to do that one thing, and that's what we're going to focus on. It's hard to do all the other bits and pieces that everybody else kind of thinks about naturally, because these are unwritten social kind of constructs. Mm-hmm. And these are quite lost in a lot of people on the spectrum. It's a fascinating concept.
Right. Yeah. So what about if you're a financial advisor and you're working with parents who have an autistic child? What would you say to the parents?
The easiest thing is that, you know, it depends what kind of advice they're getting for, but I guess that the thing that they need the most is to prepare for the kid's future in terms of like actual care, because, you know, a friend of mine has a nonverbal autistic daughter and he's worked his butt off to make sure that he has put away a certain amount, and he works with a financial advisor, to put away a certain amount of capital so that she is then taken care of financially when they eventually pass away, obviously, because it's, you know, inevitable. So I think one of the things that the parents need to think about is especially in the United States, is ongoing funding for care, because it's not, you know, like in the UK, we wouldn't have that issue. You know, the domiciliary care and home care and social servicing is all free, you know, it's whatever. But obviously in the United States, you pay a huge capital for that stuff. So if you're financially advising anybody, I think it would be on kind of like making sure that...
Tell them to move to the UK.
Yeah, just tell them to move to the UK, you know, sod it.
Right.
But I think, because that's one of the biggest... And like having access as you grow older, okay, maybe the kids are in certain type of therapy when they're kids, right? And the parents are paying for, I don't know, how much dollars a month for them to have this type of therapy. But as they grow older, they'll need all different types of therapy. And it's not something that they actively think about. And you don't know what type of therapy they want because it changes all the time. So it's being prepared financially for maybe you're going to have a specialist that's $200 an hour, you know what I mean, to come once or twice a week to see your child when they're a teenager, you know, for 2 years, you know, that's a lot of money. So I would say that, because like now I went from just having counseling to then I had counseling and psychological intervention, and then I went back to just counseling. Now I've got counseling, autism specific therapy, occupational therapy, and psychotherapy with medication. So, you know, in different parts of your life, you don't know which one is going to be more expensive. So to me, I would always advise any parent, you know, to say, well, look, you have to really think about the future. It's kind of like a second college fund, but it's to secure the livelihood of your kid. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think we're going to wrap here. Dan, thank you so much. You've been a great guest. So, I guess what would be the number one misunderstanding that you would feel financial advisors should be aware of that people tend to have of autistic people?
Okay, so I think that people think that because somebody can verbally communicate, right, like I am with you now, that they're going to understand everything you're saying like a typical person would. That's a huge misunderstanding. So people give me the responsibility to understand everything that I'm saying without any follow-up or any note or any kind of like, hey, do you understand what I'm saying? You know what I mean? So I've had meetings with people and they say, okay, cool, so that's all done. Meeting's over. I'm like, oh, goodness, you know, I have no idea what's going on. I have it every time with the utility bills. So if a financial advisor would then say, okay, we've done that now, do you understand it, or should we go through it again? Should I draw it down in pictures? So just making sure that the biggest misconception is that they don't, you know, not everybody understands everything just off the bat, and they're not a typical person. They may be verbally, consciously able to look you in the eyes. It doesn't mean that everything is staying in there, because it's not in a format that they're able to digest.
Yeah, and it's a spectrum too. So sometimes they'll make eye contact, and then sometimes they won't, you know. Or yeah, that's a great point. Just because someone is not a nonverbal autistic person, it doesn't mean that they can necessarily process. Yeah,
everything that is going on, because it's, right. It's a lot, you exactly. know, it's a lot to take in.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, great, Dan. Thank you so much. So, if people want to follow you, and I really thank hope you. That they do, because I mean, I really mean it from my heart that this man is changing the world, and I think we should all support him, because at the end of the day, he's teaching us how to be more sensitive to other people. And I think that this is something that the world is definitely in need of. And so you've really helped humanity, Dan. And I think everyone should support what you're doing. How can people reach you and follow you?
Sure. So people can reach me at theaspieworld.com. So that's A-S-P-I-E world.com. So sorry, T-H-E-A-S-P-I-E-W-O-R-L-D.com. And the same on any social media network, just type in the Aspie World and you'll find me everywhere. And on reach out to me, I respond to every single person. I get about 10,000 communications a month where I respond to everybody. So if you want to email me or tweet me or DM me, whatever, just do that. And I'd be more than happy to have a conversation.
It's true. Yes, absolutely. Okay, Dan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay. And everybody, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast.